You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to another episode of Leafs Talk Forever. All three of us are with us. Kyle is back. What do you got to say for yourself, Kyle? All right, apparently Kyle's not with us. Okay, moving on.
Good talk.
Yeah, this guy just, I don't know, doesn't show up for a week and then ignores us. Nice. Remember, there's a Discord group chat. We can send you the invite if you want. DM us on Twitter for that. This is in a partnership with Inside the Rink. Follow them on Twitter at Inside the Rink _the_rink at on Twitter. And we're gonna move right. All right, bad start. We're gonna move right into jersey numbers. So Scott, you can take it away.
Yeah. So this week with jersey number 17. If you've been listening to prior episodes, especially the first couple where we decided to do this, we said we were going to do players that we would have been able to watch as our favorites, just to make it make sense, because we weren't going to pick someone from the 70s, 60s, where we would never have been able to see them play unless it's highlights. So that comes into a problem with number 17, where the last Leaf to wear jersey number 17 was Wendell Clark, who, although he did play in the 90s, Spencer and Kyle were either not born when he put the end of his career, or I was too young to watch him in the main part of his career with Toronto. So we're just going to do classics this week because there's nobody that we could choose from in the eras that we really watched hockey. So with that said, we have Dick Duff, Rod Seeling, J.P. Parise, who's the father of Zach, and whatever the other guy's name is. I can't remember his name right now.
And a friend of our dad's.
Yeah, what's the other brother's name? Zach and...
I forget, he was like a goalie or something.
Yeah, Stu Gavin, Bruce Boudreau, and then Wendell Clark, as previously mentioned. And then we're not going to go into detail about all of them. Like we said last week, the next couple jersey numbers coming up have a lot of players that we would list off, and it would take too long to go through all of their career and stats. So if you want to know more about them, just Google them.
Google, everyone's best friend, a free service. Use it. Don't make yourself seem like an idiot. So as for last week, we kind of did a rumor mill situation. With that, we talked all the rumors about what was happening with the Leafs and the NHL. This episode is particularly based around goaltending because there is a lot of news and notes that are coming around the Leafs. So we're going to get straight into them right now. Kyle's going to talk about the Campbell contract updates that he is aware of, which I'm sure if you guys have read the articles out there, we all are, but Kyle will take it away.
Yeah, thank you. And Jack Campbell, the contracts, the details, they've slowly picked up, but they haven't really progressed too much so far as of what I've read. Hopefully that picks up soon. I'm not sure with regards to other teams and interest with him, if he's been in touch with anyone. That's all I know of as of right now.
Scott, the brother's name was Jordan Parise.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to add on from what I've heard, just from listening to podcasts and stuff, apparently, I forget his first name, but it's like Overhart, Craig Overhart, Chris Overhart, something like that, Dean Overhart, something. Is the agent that represents Jack Campbell. And Nick Kiprios on the podcast that I listened to had mentioned that around the NHL, they know him as Overcharge because he tries to get the players as much money as he possibly can, which isn't a good look for Toronto or isn't a good situation for Toronto. So I kind of want to go around and what would be the deal that you'd give Jack Campbell?
3.5 for 3 years. Obviously he wants, what do you want, 5, 5.5, something like that. Yeah, I don't think he's going to get that from the Leafs. He may get it from another team, whether rumors are Detroit or whatever other team has interest in him, whatever the rumors are. I don't think Toronto's going to re-sign him if he wants more than 4. I think based on his past play and then his season with Toronto last year, 3 for 3.5 is a relatively good price for him.
I think I'd maybe do 4, but yeah, I'm in kind of the same books as you, Scott. I wouldn't give him too much. There's always some available goalies out there. I'm not sure what they'd want, like a Billy Husso or Darcy Kemper. I don't see him leaving Colorado, but if the chances were to happen, then I think Leafs should be pursuing him for sure. But yeah, Billy Husso, he'd be solid. I don't really know how comfortable I'd be, though, pursuing him. A guy who's never really been a number one up until this year, and even this year he kind of split the role of Binnington. He didn't go right into number one. But there's also traded options that we will be looking at later. But yeah, $4 million max, I'd say, for Campbell. Wouldn't go any higher than that.
Just on the Billy Husso, I've heard from a few things that I listened to, and what I've seen is apparently Billy Husso might be comfortable taking a 1-year deal to be back with St. Louis next year. I don't know the validity in that, but yeah, it seems like he likes the team there, and he really likes Binnington. So,
was he the starter in the playoffs, or was Binnington?
He started, yeah. There?
Like most of the games, Binnington took over. So when they got beat up, Binnington was the goalie. Because he got run. He got run by Kadri. That's right.
Yeah, he got run by an 18-wheeler. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But also, people seem to forget that Billy Husso was supposed to be Jordan Binnington. He was just injured when Binnington got called up.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't injured, then Binnington would have been a minor leaguer.
He wants 1 year to what, prove he can be a starter, and then he'll take
another after that? I don't know exactly. Like, I didn't hear all the details. It was just like on a podcast I listened to, and it was suggested that apparently he likes it in St. Louis. So I don't think he necessarily was asking for 1 year, but that was what the guy had heard, that he would take a 1-year contract to return just before things get, because like I think after next season they have to pay a couple guys bigger term and bigger contracts. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I could also see Edmonton and teams like that taking a run at him, even Toronto, and maybe they could pull him for $2 or $3 more million than what he's getting from St. Louis. But I'll do the Jack Campbell thing quick, and then we'll just transition right into the free agent or the trade options and other options for the Leafs. I would probably do, like what you guys are saying, 4 at the most. Only 4 if you traded Peter Mrazek. If you're keeping Peter Mrazek, I would just give Jack Campbell the same contract that you gave Peter Mrazek, which is, I think, 3.4?
Yeah, I think somewhere around there, yeah.
But I personally would just start fresh.
I don't get why he wants... I mean, I get why, because if you look around the league, his agent has for lack of a better term, inflated his comparison or his skill level. Not saying he's not a bad goalie. He's a pretty good goalie, but I don't understand why really having 1, maybe 2 solid years as a starter. Other than that, you were minor league backup. Why would you be clamoring or asking, demanding 5.5 when you haven't really proved anything in the league. It seems weird that his agent would, obviously the agent wants to get paid too, but like it just seems weird that the agent was just all gung-ho for him making 5.5 when, if you look at his play, or taking out the last 2 years where he was pretty much Toronto's number one guy, before that, he didn't do anything in the league. I don't know why they're so hard set on 5.5, 5 when team. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I understand why, because the money will be promised if he signed a $5 million contract for 3 or 4 years and then he got bought out. That money, he's going to get some kind of guaranteed cash. And I understand like he wants to make money, but If I was Jack Campbell, I would probably be asking for as much as I could possibly get to, but at some point you got to look at yourself in the mirror and think, okay, if teams aren't going to offer me 5, which he'll get 5 in the open market because teams are desperate, but like if teams aren't going to offer me 5, then obviously I need to tell my agent, like, basically sit down and listen to what I'm saying. But yeah. Then that also goes with what Kyle was saying, is like they're moving closer. And the story that I read was Jack Campbell saying that he's committed to this team and he wants to come back. So I'm kind of curious now, is it Jack Campbell sitting down as agent and saying, like, Toronto's where I want to be? But then we transition to the next topic of goaltenders. You're hearing more stories about how, you know, Toronto's interested in said person and said person, you know, this, that, the other. Is that also like someone in Toronto's organization leaking this kind of stuff, even though it's not true? Like, it could not be true that they're interested in, say, Darcy Kemper or Billy Huso, just for example. But are they saying that because now it's making Jack Campbell sweat? Because he's openly said he wants to come back. Like, he said that he's committed to helping this team and he wants to come back and he likes it here. So now Toronto is trying to play hardball and saying, like, listen, we've got other options, so you're going to have to come down and meet us.
Yeah, I don't know. This situation's weird. And just to bring up your topic there, I did read something about Detroit the other day with regards to them potentially trading Nedeljkovic, them being interested in trading him. Not sure if it's true or not, but if that's the case, I know we've mentioned before that Campbell is from Michigan. I really could see him going there if he doesn't sign with the Leafs, because I know you just mentioned he really wants to sign to the Leafs. Now he might be starting to sweat with the fact that there's all this goaltending talk around the Leafs, and everyone wants to be, I think so, everyone would want to be a number one goalie in Toronto with the crazy market that we have.
Yeah, it's people say it's the second hardest place to play goalie. Versus Montreal. And the agent's name is Kurt Overhart, I believe. Got that. I thought about it. And he actually represents our next topic. So let's transition from Jack Campbell to this person. And let's tie them all together, obviously. But John Gibson. In the news, obviously, John Gibson has been, quote-unquote, open for a trade. He's come out publicly on an Athletic podcast or whatever and said that's not true. He's open to seeing what Anaheim's doing with his roster, but what's he supposed to say? Obviously, he doesn't want to go through a rebuild. Anaheim is. The interesting thing to note here is everyone's tied to the Leafs, including myself. I even wrote an article on it. But the interesting point is that as of July 1st, 2022, so 2021, he put Toronto on his 10th team no trade clause. So then, since then, Chris Johnson has come out and said Toronto actually doesn't have any interest in John Gibson. My question to you guys is this. Is that just another way of Toronto saying, like, trying to stop the media from linking those two just in case? You know what I mean? Like, Kyle Dubas with the Marc-Andre Fleury thing, he wasn't happy about it. Do you think this is his way of saying, like, okay, we're going to get the media to say we're not interested? Or some media reporters to say we're not interested, so then it brings back the desperation that Toronto has for a goalie? Or do you think that it's legitimate that they are not interested? Scott?
I mean, I don't know. It could be. I mean, Kyle Dubas isn't a big supporter of leaks or even like breaking the news before it's officially happened. The reporters are kind of jumped the gun on saying it, and then when it as truth, and then when it turned out to be true, Kyle Dubas isn't really a big fan of that. But it just strikes me as odd that, I mean, Chris Johnson aside, I don't know if he said, I'm pretty sure I saw a tweet somewhere along the line that he linked John Gibson to Toronto. It may not have been him. I'm not 100% sure. But all these all these reporters and all these insiders and podcasters and writers and whatever have linked to Toronto and John Gibson but not one of them thought to realize that he had no trade clause and to look to see if Toronto was on there. Which, I mean, could not be a problem for the Leafs because come July 2022, when he submits a new no-trade clause, Toronto could not be on it, and then they could just trade for him after that. But I don't know if it's necessarily a Leafs thing that they're trying to get the reporters and stuff off the scent, as opposed to people finally realize that, oh, crap, Toronto's on his no-trade clause, so everybody kind of jumping on the bandwagon here has kind of been offbeat because no one really thought to look to see if how that whole – or the people who were linking him to Toronto, I shouldn't say everybody thought to look. The people who were linking him to Toronto didn't look to see if there was actually a proper way for him to come to the team because there wasn't if he's on the no trade list.
Yeah, I agree. And this is, I heard this. I'm not going to keep plugging these podcasts. I'm just going to say it on a podcast. Guy seems to know a little bit what he was talking about. The interesting thing that I learned about no trade clause this year with the Dadonov thing or the Dadonov thing is from my understanding, I could be wrong here, but from my understanding, if he doesn't submit it by July 1st, the no trade clause isn't voided. It's just the same list as previous years. But the one guy that I was listening to on his podcast suggested that there could be a chance that Kyle Dubas meets with John Gibson and his agent, who's obviously the same agent as Campbell. That's where I want to tie in. But it says, like, we're interested in your client, try and talk to John Gibson, try and persuade him to waive the no-trade clause, and then when he does, either before or after he submits that new trade clause, like, Toronto would still have access to getting him. But the issue that this guy suggested, and Kyle, you can kind of touch on this to see what your opinion is, if you're Kurt Overhart, or whatever his agent's name is, and you're taking Jack Campbell in the lease negotiations, and then I'm Kyle Dubas and Scott's John Gibson, and I come to you and say, I want Scott to play on my team, but you already have player X as a current player on my team. What would you think? Would you make the trade negotiation or the contract negotiation harder for me, or would you say, okay, that's cool, like you want a new player, or would you question me and make it harder on me?
In this sense, I think... I don't think they're going to make it harder on... See, it's a tough situation here. Are they going to make it harder on Jack Campbell, a guy who's always been there for them? Well, I can't say always because he's only been there the last two seasons. But I don't think they're going to make it harder on Jack Campbell. With all this goalie talk right now, I'm very confused. And John Gibson's been linked to the Leafs for long time now, but yeah, I don't think they're gonna make it harder on him, but I do. I don't know. My head's very confused at this situation. Scott, maybe you have more of an opinion.
Is this from the agent perspective or from the media perspective?
Yeah, like obviously the media is gonna say what they want, but like if you're the agent. And I'm Kyle Dubas, and I want Jack Campbell, or I wanted Jack Campbell until John Gibson came available, and I'm trying to now convince John Gibson. Would you make it harder on me, or would you just say, okay, I'm going to get paid either way, choose the client? Because a lot of people are saying that it would be very hard for Dubas to do this.
I wouldn't look at it from the perspective of I'm getting paid either way. I look at it from the perspective of your client, John Gibson, is unhappy in Anaheim. And if he comes to Toronto or not, he wants to be traded. You get him to the team that wants him. If that just happens to be Toronto, then I'd say do it based on the fact that Jack Campbell's going to get signed. If it's not by Toronto, it's going to be by another team. So he's going to get his money. If he wants to stay in Toronto, it's a different story, which may suck for him if Toronto chooses Gibson over Campbell. But from the agent perspective, you have to do what's best for each of your clients individually. not as a collective. So if John Gibson wants to come to Toronto and Toronto wants John Gibson, then you make John Gibson going to Toronto happen, because Jack Campbell is going to get a contract from another team. He may be upset that he doesn't go to Toronto, but I think you'd have to separate them as two individual clients instead of you. Like, it's not really a collective, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. I think like your first priority in the John Gibson situation is, if he's unhappy in Anaheim, as you said, get him out. And if the Toronto is the point or team, then sure. And you're, like you said, individually, okay, your first situation with Jack Campbell is, does he want to re-sign with Toronto, and can you get that done? You're right. I agree with you. I just think it's interesting to me that people are saying, the agent will say, well, no, you're not talking to John Gibson right now because you've got Jack Campbell. Like, that just doesn't seem realistic. I know it could be, but it's like, if I was Kyle Dubas, I would just say, but, like, we don't want Jack Campbell's contract. He's a UFA. Like, we're done. We've severed ties with him. We don't want him on our team anymore. Now we want John Gibson, who just happens to be the same, under the same agent. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of weird that people are saying, he'll say, basically, you got to pick Jack Campbell, or give me a reason why you don't want Jack Campbell before I let you talk to John Gibson. That just seems kind of unrealistic.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. From the agent perspective, like, he's not going to say, like, put them as one prize, right? It's not like it's either or. It's not, you can't get Gibson without Campbell. It's, you can either get Gibson or Campbell. But from the other perspective is, Dubas also has some leverage here, because either way, he's getting a goalie. If they re-sign Jack Campbell for $5 million, then they get Jack Campbell. If they trade for John Gibson and he makes, what, six, a little over six, then they get John Gibson. So he could kind of play up the agent, because either way, he's getting a starting goalie. So I don't really see how Toronto is in a negative spot here, is that if that's what people are saying, because they either get John Gibson or they get, I mean, if the trade thing pans out, or they get Jack Campbell. So it seems more of a pressure on the agent to get these two guys what they want, as opposed to Kyle Dubas being pressured into only getting Jack Campbell.
And I agree 100% with that, and this goes back to what I was saying about people are suggesting that this could be a ploy for Toronto to now have leverage over the Jack Campbell situation, saying, okay, we have three goalies lined up that we could get, or we have interest in, or whatever. This is your last chance to kind of negotiate with us and meet us in the middle kind of thing, you know what I'm saying? And I think that could work, because then there'd be like, okay, well, we have a goalie right now that you might be familiar with, you know, he's agreed to waive his no trade clause. His agent and me have worked on a deal, or the team and me have worked on a deal. This is your last chance. And then obviously, as you said, like, the agent's going to represent them individually, which I know is true, because there was an agent on the 32 Thoughts podcast that probably like millions of people listen to. And he said, like, he separates everyone individually, and it doesn't matter if it's Carey Price or if it's a third line guy. Like, he's not going to take one priority over the other. And that's the situation with this, right? Like, yeah, Jack Campbell's priority might be Toronto, but he's not going to prioritize John Gibson because John Gibson's unhappy in the situation with Toronto, you know?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me, at least, of why he would use one as a bargaining chip to get the other one what he wants. That kind of just screws over. In this case, if he uses John Gibson as a bargaining chip to get Jack Campbell in Toronto, that kind of just screws over John Gibson. Which, and I mean, I guess in a way, it might not, because he would still be traded. He may not be traded to a team as good as Toronto, but he'll still be traded out of Anaheim, and vice versa for Jack Campbell. But I don't know. It just seems weird that people would think that he's using them as a tandem to get one of them in Toronto, when in all actuality, it's his job to get them both what they want. In disregard of what the other one wants. But just touch on that thing real quick. I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot here, but I don't think that the news aspect of the John Gibson or the agent stuff is necessarily a bargaining chip on the part of the Leafs to get Jack Campbell to lower his price. I think it's more along the lines of Toronto's willing to increase what they want to give him, as long as Jack Campbell, who probably more than likely, now that news has come out and said he wants to stay in Toronto, as long as Jack Campbell is willing to go a little lower than what he wants. So it's not necessarily that So Toronto may want to give him 3.5 and Jack Campbell wants 5.5. But because they both want them in Toronto, then the price is being a bit lowered on Jack Campbell's end, so they could go 4.5. I don't think this news, it may be on Kyle Dubas' part, which, I mean, is kind of smart on their part if it is true, but it just seems more likely that it's Jack Campbell wants to stay in Toronto. Dubas and them don't necessarily want to have to deal with the hassle of trading for a goalie and giving up pieces or trying to swindle a goalie in free agency who may not want to come to Toronto. So it seems more likely that it's Campbell wanting to lower his price because he wants to stay, and then Dubas and the rest be more willing to increase their price by a million to get Campbell to sign here.
Yeah, that's a valid point, actually. And yeah, I mean, I can't really dispute anything you just said, because that's what we talked about this the other day, and this was what we kind of came to agree on. But okay, let's talk about John Gibson for a second here. So John Gibson gets traded to Toronto, let's just say. The trade proposal that I've seen people say is, I'm just going to call him SDA. It's like Dura Ozechevsky. I think I actually said his name right, so I don't know if I did. But Nick Robertson, I saw a second-round pick, and I saw Peter Mrazek as the cash to change hands because Anaheim's going through a rebuild. That doesn't include a retaining salary. So then you've got John Gibson at 6, say, and Eric Schallgren at 1. Roughly 850,000. So together you're at $7 million. If you keep Peter Mrazek and you sign Jack Campbell for 5, you're at $9 million. What would be a smarter, like, obviously Peter Mrazek's probably gone anyways, but what would be a smarter situation in your guys' opinion? Would you rather trade 2 prospects and a pick that Toronto is losing draft capital and get rid of a bad contract, or would you rather just sign Jack Campbell and keep Peter Mrazek, or trade Peter Mrazek?
I'm going to kind of go off the charts here. I'm going to agree with them going with the easiest option and just signing Campbell, like Scott had said, just because right now they can make their primary focus, and then they don't have to give up anything if they're going to re-sign him, because Campbell's obviously shown that he wants to stay. But I'm still going to get rid of Mrazek and his contract. I've seen something about reports to I've just read some small articles. Mrazek to Arizona, because everyone knows Arizona has a ton of cap space. Mrazek and a couple other pieces, and the Leafs get back some draft picks. So that's my take on this. I would sign Campbell. I wouldn't trade for Gibson. I know we've given Robertson a lot with regards to chances in the NHL so far. I think he's had like 4 stints with the Leafs, some bigger than others. But SDA, yeah, I'd still want to see him. He's supposed to be pretty good. And you said second round pick, right? Second and third or something?
Yeah, second this year.
Okay, yeah. So I think this year we need to go all out with our draft picks and keep them all. The draft class this year is pretty solid with regards to depth, so I would not trade for Gibson. I would keep Campbell, sign him at 4. I would say 4.5 if you need to, especially now that he knows the Leafs have talks with other goalies. I think he'll be able to negotiate something, but yeah, and then get rid of Mrazek's contract if you can.
People are saying Peter Mrazek's contract's going for a second round pick. So, anyways, continue, Scott.
I'm on the opposite end here of Kyle. Obviously, I don't want to give up Robertson. I don't think they've given him enough of a chance. They have called him up a few times, but I don't really think they let him showcase what he can really do or even develop into a solid NHL player. They kind of used him in a couple games and then sat him and then sent him back down. But I know Spencer knows this, but I've been a champion of Toronto trading for John Gibson. I think John Gibson's a better goalie than Jack Campbell. the last 3 years aside, because Anaheim hasn't been the best of teams in those years, I think John Gibson is a solid goalie. He showed it in Anaheim. I'm pretty sure one or two of the years he was in his early years in Anaheim, they made it past the first round, which would be a bonus in Toronto. I'm not a big, like I said, a big, or I'm not a fan of giving up Robertson, but to dump Mraz's contract, the second round pick, at this point with Toronto, I think it's all, you need to bring in what you can to win, because you already have a stacked offensive team with Matthews, Marner, Nylander, when Tavares shows up, Riley. So not necessarily drafting a solid player in that pick, because 3 years from now, there might not be room for him with, if you still have those four offensive guys on the front end. So if you give up the second round pick, I'm okay with that. And then Simon Durosh and Genoff or whatever his name is. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of prospects in Toronto and a lot of prospects that have come through Toronto in the last few years have been in the same boat where there's going to be no room for them, aside from like a Matthew Nyes. So if you need to give him up too, then I would. I'm a huge, or in favor of trading for John Gibson within reason. Obviously, I don't want to give up a Nylander or a Marner level player, but if you have to give up a few prospects and a pick and then dump Mraz's contract, I think that I would do that 100%.
Well, that's kind of what Anaheim wants too. Like, it seems that they want draft picks, they want prospects. So, and also the tie between Kyle, are you able to look up what team Mason McTavish played on prior to Hamilton? He got traded from someone, and I don't know if it was Peterborough or not. It could have been, but Nick Robertson and Oscar D C A what
A B C D
S D A sorry played on Peterborough, and they had like one of the best seasons in Peterborough history. It was Peterborough, so yeah. It could be for Pat Verbeek. It could be a benefit if you're trading John Gibson to bring in two guys who, like, if you put those three on a line together and they did what they did at junior together, like if they could produce at that level, like they all had 100-point seasons, like that would be wild for Anaheim. Plus, you're getting Peter Mrazek, who basically is just like, I think they have Alex Stalock, I believe, or I forget, maybe
Anthony Stolarz.
That's it. That's his name. Yeah, and apparently they're pretty high on him. It's kind of like the Matt Murray, Anton Forsberg situation in Ottawa. So Peter Mrazek could probably just play backup, or they wait till the second round of buyouts just before the season starts, and they buy out Peter Mrazek's contract because they can't do that too. And then that eats cap. So I just think like that could be a very interesting type of deal. But yeah, I kind of agree with Scott, really. And here's why. Kyle Dubas is probably going to get fired after this year if they have no playoff success. And then the next guy who comes in here is just probably going to blow it up, really. Like, a lot of guys are probably going to get dealt. One of the big three is probably going to be gone. And I'm not including Tavares in the big three. I would imagine it would probably be Matthews, Marner, and Riley who stay. Nylander's gone. They might even try and figure out a way to move JT's contract. Like, I just think you might as well go for it now. And, like, Elliot Freeman wrote an article about the Kawhi summer for the Leafs. Or, sorry, Masai Ujiri's Kawhi summer, of the Leafs coming this year and how he's going to make a big splash. I think John Gibson would be that big splash. And then moving out Jake Muzzin and bringing in a guy like Josh Manson, who can then help your defensive mind core, and he's defensive minded too, which is a big help in the situation because Toronto has a lot of guys that are two way on the back end. But I don't know, like, do you guys kind of agree with that? Like, he's going to get fired regardless if they have no playoff success, so you might as well go big or go home, right?
Yeah, at this point, I think you're right about that. This playoff loss this year was kind of the last straw I think he's being given. Even this year, a lot of people kind of questioned his future. And then when they announced his future, now I feel as though everyone's thinking, okay, this is your last chance, buddy. But yeah, I 100% agree with you in the fact that what he's doing this summer, will have to play a vital role in regards to next year, because
it needs to be big.
Yeah, it has to be huge. But yeah, the next guy that comes in, if the Leafs were to lose next year, I think you're 100% correct in regards to, you could see Nylander gone, you could see just the whole fire sale, who knows.
And I think the only two people that would actually legitimately be safe if there is no future for this team would be Matthews and Marner. And, like, obviously there's pieces in this that would be kind of untouchable based on NHL standards around the league. But I don't know, like, I just feel like there's a lot of rumors on the next guy we're going to talk about, Matt Murray. I think if you bring in Matt Murray right now, you're not helping your team. The guy's played a total of, like, 60 games in the last 3 years. That is no way an upgrade on Jack Campbell. Like, John Gibson is probably the only goalie that you're going to get this offseason that can compete on a level with Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy. And he's not even in their tier. Just, like, he's consistent. He plays 55 games a year. Like, you could use Eric Schalgren as your backup to play the other little bit. Gibson might even be able to give you 60 games. Apparently, from what I've heard, is John Gibson is almost the exact same personality as Freddie Anderson. Level-headed, calm, like, super friendly, super good guy to have around. So I don't know why you wouldn't. And I understand Toronto has a high tax rate and he doesn't want to come here because the trade costs, whatever, whatever. But if you bring Auston Matthews in that conversation with John Gibson and try and convince him and say, like, listen, Auston Matthews is one of the best American-born players ever, and he's telling you, like, come to this team, be the backbone of this team. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you think, Scott? Is it the final straw? Does Kyle Dubas have to do something big?
I mean, I don't necessarily know if bringing in John Gibson is a huge splash. Obviously, he's a good goalie, but I don't think he's not a top end goalie. Like, on the level of, like, top, even top 10 in the league, I don't think he is. He's a good goalie. I don't think that he's as big a splash as you, because you brought up, are necessarily thinking he will be. But I don't know if, aside from that, if they do bring in, I hope they bring him in. I don't see Dubas really doing much in terms of bringing in bigger name players. I don't know. I don't feel like we need it. As opposed, in terms of him getting fired, if they don't have playoff success, yeah. I mean, it's been, what, 8 years now, and they haven't made it on the first round, so if he doesn't make it out of the first round again, I could see him getting fired. But I don't know if the big splash is necessarily needed. I think it's more bringing in guys who can help you get past that hurdle in terms of, like, depth guys. Like, if you look at Tampa Bay, when they got, obviously they've won three straight, but before that they didn't have the best of, like, they weren't making Stanley Cup finals besides the one they lost to who? They lost to Chicago. Yeah, but they didn't go in. I guess besides, what's his face there in Montreal? Jonathan Drouin. They didn't dump Stamkos and Braden Point and Kucherov. They brought in likes of Patrick Maroon and Nick Paul and all the guys who have chipped in when it mattered the most. So I don't necessarily know if Toronto needs to go on and get that big splash. If you consider John Gibson that big splash, then yeah, they are going to. But I don't see him as that. I think they need more along the lines of guys who can play consistently in games where it matters the most. Because besides the first couple games of the playoffs this year, Toronto's depth guys and the likes of Engvall and McKayev and Kerfoot, they didn't really do much in terms of trying to get them past that hump.
I do agree, and I'm not saying, like, the big splash needs to be, like, obviously the Kawhi Leonard deal that you talk about in Toronto is obviously, like, one of the biggest trades in the last 10 years. I'm just saying I'm using that as the, I guess, the metaphor or whatever. But essentially what I mean is, like, if you bring in John Gibson, I think that's a massive upgrade from what you can get in the free agent market right now. And I think he's a massive upgrade over Jack Campbell. But as we've mentioned before, I think Kyle was the actual one that mentioned him first, but, like, Natrushkin, there's Burakovsky. There's so many second and third tier players that you could look at and say, okay, if we bring in at least one of these guys, like if Toronto brought in even Raquel or Natrushkin, whomever you put in there as a free agent and say, okay, we'll sign him for 5 for 5 or 4 for 5, 3 for 5, whatever, and we put him on the second line, or the third line, then he's going to come in and he's going to put 25 goals on the board and he's going to have a 60-point season and he's going to hit and he's going to dig in the corners and he's going to be an all-around player. And I think like the big splash that I'm talking about is moving out contracts, really. Peter Mrazek, I think, needs to go. Jake Muzzin, I think, needs to go. Alex Kerfoot, as much as I like him, I think $3 million for him, I think that you could get, you could use that to bring in someone else. Like, I think if you parted ways with Alex Kerfoot, and again, I like Alex Kerfoot. I think he's well, fits well with Will Nylander. But if you brought in, say, Nitrushkin and, I don't know, I'm going to stick with Josh Manson because I want Toronto to get him on the back end. And then you got rid of Jake Muzzin and you brought in John Gibson. I think those three players could make are potentially bigger upgrades than what you had. Like, that's what I mean by big splash. I'm not saying Toronto's going to go on and trade like William Nylander for Draisaitl or something.
I wasn't necessarily talking.
You know that. I know.
I wasn't necessarily talking about you. Sorry.
Okay. No. Go.
We kind of just did the same thing. There. I meant like in terms of how Elliot Friedman meant it. He wasn't referring to Toronto dumping contracts off the books and then just bringing in guys that they need. He was talking in terms of like Toronto bringing in like someone big who can help them and potentially win a Stanley Cup. But in that regard, I don't think they're going to do it. And then
around that was Tyler Bertuzzi. Like in that podcast, then Jeff Merrick mentioned the Tyler Bertuzzi rumor to Toronto for the last 3 years. So you're right.
I don't even see him coming. And if it's a player, I mean, not to say Tyler Bertuzzi is better than a Nichushkin or a Burakovsky, but if it's a player like a second tier guy like they are, I could see Toronto doing that. But I guess in terms of because it's Detroit isn't necessarily the best team, maybe Tyler Bertuzzi has been a little overhyped. Not saying he's a bad player, but he's like one of the top three guys in Detroit, so maybe people view him as a bit more of a better player than the other guys. But I just don't see them going out and bringing in someone of that of a higher end caliber. I think they're just going to bring in like a if it's Nichushkin and Burakovsky, I'd be fine with that. But the way that Elliot Friedman was phrasing it, it seemed like they were going to go out and bring in the next or like a Sidney Crosby or a David Pastrnak, and I just don't see them doing. Obviously, they can't do that unless they give up someone in return. But
yeah, I agree with that.
I just wanted to touch on how you guys think that if Dubas is fired, the next guy comes in is going to do not a rebuild, but kind of like a fire sale, a potential rebuild. I guess is how you guys were kind of phrasing it. I would say
retool.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't even see them getting rid of. Maybe if they can move out to Tavares, but I don't see them getting rid of Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Riley. I think the next guy comes in is going to try to retool in a way that is going to bring in more players who can help them win, not necessarily star players, but players that Dubas won't necessarily go for because it doesn't fit his style of DMing.
But, like, I agree with you here in a sense, but we saw Dubas just add little pieces last year. And
that was the best Leafs team ever.
Yeah, like it was, but
and I mean, to be fair, Toronto, those little pieces
Toronto turned out to one.
Those little pieces turned out to be pretty good. Like Michael Bunting had an almost 70-point season. Dave was a solid defensive forward for us. Like it was unlucky plays and circumstances in the playoffs that made us, because Toronto was playing well all series. I think that's the best they played in the playoffs since that Boston series. So I agree that adding little pieces might be the best strategy, but when little pieces then turn out to be big pieces for your team, in the case of Bunting or Kampf, I don't necessarily say that those don't work.
I kind of in between you guys, but Kyle, continue your point because I cut you off.
No, I was just gonna say like I don't expect the big. Huge piece, but like last summer, what would you guys say our biggest addition was? Not Michael Bunting, because no one really expected him to do what he did. What would you say it was? Nick Ritchie, maybe? Everyone thought he was going to be like second line.
I'd say Peter Mrazek.
Mrazek? Okay.
Like by name, I would say Peter Mrazek personally, because it was supposed to be a 1A, 1B.
Sure. Okay, so other than Mrazek, yeah, though, who did you say it was? Nick Ritchie?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think we still need a solid player on the second line. And you don't expect him to be anyone crazy. Like, I really like Nichushkin, Burakovsky, Raquel, one of those guys that can play on the second line. I just don't think Kerfoot's doing it. And I just think someone else can produce. Obviously, to add to your point, Scott, I would still add a bunch of those little pieces. But, do you think that we wouldn't need a second line guy? You just want the little pieces? Is that what you were trying to say?
No. Obviously, the little depth pieces help. And if you can find a second line player who isn't going to cost you an arm and a leg, who can come in and produce for you. Like, when we put out the list, or when we each, a couple podcasts ago, picked the player that we wanted, I think I said Ricard Raquel because he would solidify the top six on the second line.
Yeah, so you did.
I'm all for going out and getting a second line player who can come in and produce. I just don't want them to do it in terms of getting rid of a player who also is a producer like Nylander, or spending money that they don't necessarily need to spend to do that. Where they could bring in, if they get Nichushkin, that'd be great. But if they can go out and get someone who's a little cheaper, who can come in and produce, who isn't necessarily expected to do it, but then does it, like Bunting, maybe you'll have to spend a little bit more. But I think I'm more in favor of getting a guy who, a cheaper option at second, or the second line, than a more expensive option is what I'm trying to say.
Let's pause this for a second. Let's get a word from the sponsor. And then we'll come back and discuss. We'll take 10 minutes at the end of the podcast just to go over other news and notes, but I want to get back into this conversation for a little bit, and then finals predictions, which we made last night before the game. So we will be back. Write down this promo code because you only got potentially 3 to 6 games left to make some dollars. We'll be back. And now a quick word from our show sponsors and friends of Inside the Rink. BetUS. BetUS has your NHL, NBA, UFC, PGA, and yes, NFL betting lineups for the 27th year of live betting. Sign up for BETUS.com with promo code RINK for your 125% sign-up bonus. Again, use the promo code RINK for your 125% sign-up bonus. Play with a proven mainstay in the industry. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.com. All right, guys. Write down that promo code. Use it, make some money. Because like I said before, you only have 3 to 6 possible games left to make some money before next season starts. So we're talking about the players that we'd bring in, out, contracts, whatever, this summer. Were you done, Scott?
Yeah.
Like, you're okay. Well, I'm in between you guys because like Scott, obviously the small guys worked. Like last year, the small guys worked, but at the same time, I want a bigger name player, and I don't need like Nazem Kadri big name. Like I don't need Draisaitl big name. I just need, like, in my opinion, I think we need someone in the top six to solidify and be. I don't know if you'd say the motor or the engine, but like if William Nylander is producing on a clip that he produced this year, and the player X on the second line is producing, then it makes up for John Tavares not producing if he goes through stretches. But at the same time, I'm kind of different from you guys because I just want them to clear cap. Like personally, I'm fine with them bringing in depth guys, middle of the pack guys. But I just think Toronto needs to get rid of some of these contracts that they have that aren't going to cut it for them anymore. Like personally, obviously the Peter Mrazek one. I really liked Peter Mrazek before he came here. And here's my hot take of the night. I personally think if Toronto let Peter Mrazek play earlier in the season when they rode Jack Campbell for 30 games in a row, I think Peter Mrazek would have had a different outcome in Toronto. Hot take of the day. But I just think that if they clear even at Kerfoot, I think I like him. I think it's time for him to go. Muzzin, if falls on RFA, obviously you can bring him back or whatever. Simmons needs to go. Like, I just think if you clear as much as you possibly can, you have space to bring in some other pieces. But going off what Scott said with the depth, I also think that Toronto should have some NHL-ready caliber guys in their leagues. Like, I understand Alex Steeves might be an interesting player for them, but, like, I think if you had, say, even like a Josh Hosang level player that you could call up and say, okay, Engvall's injured, we're going to replace him with this guy in the minors who's playing well, who's consistent, who's an NHL-ready guy, then I think that would also help Toronto because sometimes in their season, they're bringing up guys who could be like a third line player in the AHL and expecting them to do well in the NHL, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I understand, obviously, that's hockey, but I just think, like, if you had even two guys that you could rely on in the AHL to call up and not take spots, and that's kind of their role, then, like, I think that might be something that Toronto could look at doing. Let's talk Matt Murray. Let's get Matt Murray involved in this conversation because there is
just rumors that he's quick, connected. Just a question. Yeah. Does anybody know what Nichushkin is asking for?
Well, right now he's coming off 1.25.
850.
Yeah.
Is it 1.25? Yeah, but is he going to ask for like 3 years or going to ask for like 5 or 6?
Right now I see his salary's at 2.8.
I would say probably he's asking for a little bit more. Like, 3.5. I would say probably. I haven't heard anything, but I would imagine around 4 or 5, or 4.5 or 5. He had a super good season. He's revitalized his career, and he's having a good playoff. I think that it's just dollar signs for him. I think a guy that might ask for less is Burke.
I was just asking because he's coming off of what, $6 million?
But I think he's been injured a lot. So, I mean, like, yeah, he could be coming off a bigger deal. Maybe he doesn't want to take less, but I don't see Burakovsky getting $8 million.
No, yeah, I was just asking because my point was, like, bring in someone who, on that second line, who you aren't going to pay an arm and a leg for it. So if Nichushkin is that guy, you convince him to take 3, 3.5, I think that would fit both what Kyle was saying and then what I was saying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard. No one's ever mentioned his contract on any podcast I've listened to. So they just mentioned how they think that he'd be a good fit for pretty much everybody. I think we might be having some technical difficulties. I think there might be a delay. So just bear with us here.
I think you sound a little robotic at times in the last couple of seconds.
Yeah, that's I don't know what's on here, but I can see that the internet light is coming on. So, anyways, bear with us because we're probably gonna have some internet issues, some technical issues. So, but yeah, let's bring in Matt Murray into this conversation here. Toronto's been linked to him. He's a Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound background. Kyle Dubas really likes Matt Murray. Apparently, he's liked him for a lot of years. So, I don't see it happening. I don't want to see it happen. But what's your guys' opinion?
I'm on the same page as you here. I don't see it happening, and I don't want it to happen. But part of me thinks that. Like what Dubas did with Bunting, he can do to Murray. But that's just a gut feeling. But yeah, like you said, I'd rather not. That's the risky take that Dubas would be. I don't know if he'd want to do that, or he's always linked to his past. But yeah, I wouldn't touch Matt Murray.
Well, the only good thing about Matt Murray is you can retain him. Like, he's at 6 now, so you could get him for like 50% retain.
Yeah, I don't see it being worth it, though. Like, unless he can go back to playing the way he played. Go back to playing the way he played those 2 years, the 2 Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh. I don't see it as much of a bonus bringing him in. Although, you could argue that maybe that's what the Leafs are trying to accomplish because they're bringing in new goalie coaching staff. So maybe they're going to try to look for someone who can, like a better, like a more of a player development style goalie coach, and then they could try to bring Matt Murray back to the way he was before. But I think it's just too much of a risk.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that if Toronto could get Jack Campbell for $4 million, and then brought in swap Pete Mrazek for Matt Murray, retaining half, I think that there could be a chance that that could happen, where Matt Murray could then, you know, revitalize his career and become a good situation. But I don't see that if you're the starter, I don't see you wasting that much time on trying to make him a better goaltender at this time.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so let's get into some news and notes. Are you guys all good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, there's a massive delay, so people who are listening, we apologize for that.
There wasn't a delay on my end. I thought Kyle was going to answer first, so I paused.
Oh, okay.
My end being a little bit funky, I think.
Okay, well, we apologize for the technical difficulties, so let's try and wrap this puppy up soon. So we got the news and notes around the league. Who wants to take them?
Yeah, I can start it off if you want.
Yeah, sure, take it.
Just a quick note, Bruce Cassidy signing with Vegas, third coach in 6 years, $4.5 million for 5 years. Bruce Cassidy, the former Boston Bruins coach. I believe he coached in Boston for what, 4 years, was it?
I think it was seven.
Seven, okay, wow. I didn't even realize it was that much. Because I guess before Cassidy it was Claude Julien.
Yeah.
And then John Tortorella going to Philly, 4 years, $4 million. I think that's going to be a good look for Philly. A bunch of young kids on that team. So yeah, I think Tortorella is going to be able to produce a solid rebuild with that team and help coach those young kids. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Until those young kids do something that he doesn't agree with.
Exactly. He's very straight to the point. So.
Yeah, and then I'll treat them like Patrick Laine, and then once he gets fired after a year, Patrick Laine, or whomever the player is, will have a season like Patrick Laine. John Tortorella is one of those coaches, and I understand that you might like him, Kyle. I'm not trying to disrespect you. But John Tortorella is one of those coaches that doesn't belong in the NHL anymore. Your views are too old. Like, if you're getting mad at people for doing the Michigan, like, maybe it might be time for you just to take a behind the desk job.
He is very old school. I just like the fact that he's very straight and to the point, whereas some other coaches are kind of move around and don't say anything. But he's just very straight and to the point. That's the only thing I really like about John Tortorella.
Sad thing is, with the generation that's playing right now, you can't really be straight to the point.
No.
I'm part of that generation that's playing right now. Like, I'm only 24. You're part of that generation, Scott. You're pretty much part of the generation that's close to retirement. But I think, like, in today's NHL, like, if you're walking up to Trevor Zegras and you're screaming at him, or who's on their team as young, Morgan Frost, and you're screaming at him because he tried to do the Michigan, I think it's just going to end his career, really. Like, I think John Tortorella will end up finding himself back on TNT in no time.
Is it weird that both times John Tortorella has gone on, like, sports channels? He was there for a short period of time before getting a job again. like he was on Sportsnet, and then he was on Sportsnet for what, like 3 months before he got hired by an NHL team.
Yeah.
And then he was on, I don't even know how long he was on TNT for, but now he's back in the NHL coaching.
He must have a good agent.
Yeah. I think he's more suited for a veteran team. A team who is already through the rebuild, that's looking to take the next step, that's looking to move on to the next round of playoffs or potentially push for a cup.
I think he'd be good in Boston.
Yeah. I just don't, and Spencer brought up the point of today's players and their mentalities. I don't think he's suited to bring up, in my opinion, I could be wrong. I probably am wrong. I just don't see him as the best fit for a guy who's looking to mentor the next generation of players. I see him as more of a guy who can mold players who are already entering their primes, who are looking to become better than what they are after the rebuild is over.
And that's where Kyle's point about him comes into a play, where that he's straight to the point.
Yeah.
But, like, and I think the team I think about a lot in that situation is, like, Philly was what, maybe 15 points at 15 points more in the standings than Montreal? Like, they're not that far off from each other. And I understand Philly wasn't supposed to be that bad, and they might not be that bad. Kyle might be right. Like, they've got a decent team there. They've got a couple old guys, obviously, but like they've got a team that could find success if everyone's healthy. Like they have Ryan Ellis that no one remembered because he was injured last year. They have a decent team. If Carter Hart could turn around, pardon?
Sean Couturier, he was kind of one of those guys too, like you said about Ellis, was injured and everyone forgot about.
Yeah, and he's like probably in a, I would say, in a category of elite two-way centerman. And then you've got Carter Hart. So, like, it could be a decent signing. I just think, like, if Philly's going into the way of rebuild, which they haven't yet declared, so I guess it's kind of a moot point. But like, I think, in reality, yeah, I'm kind of 50-50 on it now. I talked myself into potentially maybe liking it a little bit.
Well, here's a question, then. Just real quick before we move on. Of Philly or Islanders, who do you think will have a better season next year?
Philly.
Philly? So you think Philly can beat one of the four out of their division? Carolina, Rangers, Pittsburgh, Washington?
Oh, no. No. I don't. I don't really personally see Washington making the playoffs either. I think that...
Philly or Islanders are one of the two that are going to take that spot.
I think Detroit might.
Detroit's in Toronto's division, aren't they?
Yeah, but
can Detroit get a second wild card? Yeah.
That's Scott, true, yeah. This is what I'm talking about. You're in the era of hockey that's close to retirement. You're what, 37?
Not even close. I should think you're older than I am.
Yeah, I am, actually. Scott's only 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Detroit might have a decent chance. But the other thing, you could make a good point there, Scott, because the other thing is Boston has, like, besides Pasternak, every one of their, and Taylor Hall, but he's kind of a plug. But besides Pasternak, like, Bergeron's not re-signed yet, so he could retire, and everyone else is due for 5 or 6 months or 7 months with injuries. So there could be a chance that, well, I mean, it's kind of smart because Boston could get the first pick if they tank. But, yeah, there could be a chance that Detroit and Philly or the Islanders make the playoffs because there might be another
Montreal spot. I think Montreal's going to have a better season, like a bounce-back year next year.
And I also think Buffalo, if they can continue on the way that they were going, I think that you can see Buffalo make the
playoffs. Oh, and or the wild card. Make it.
Yeah, probably not, actually. Did you guys see the report that's out today about what Elliot Friedman said?
No.
Elliot Friedman saying that Florida's GM and ownership is doing phone call interviews with or conversations with other coaches that are available. Like, you've got a guy who led you to the President's Trophy. And I understand John Quenneville was there for a while. I got no respect for him. But regardless, Andrew Burnett was there. And yes, he got out-coached in the playoffs. But, like, you got out-coached by one of the better coaches that we've seen in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, Pardon?
He was kind of just thrown in there quickly, right? So
yeah, but he did a damn good job. He led them to the most, the most goals scored in an NHL season. Like, I just can't see it. And like Edmonton too, still no conversation with Jay Woodcroft. Like, what are you guys doing? Anyways, I'm just going to get a couple, burn off a couple topics here just that I thought of just a second ago. Apparently there's a rumor that Paul Coffey might be more involved with the Edmonton Oilers come next season. That's supposed to be happening this season, like this off season that the hiring's happening. Some have speculated that he might be taking over the hockey operations, like the president of hockey ops, and then Ken Holland will be the GM and lose the president of hockey ops title. Secondly, the cap is going up by $1 million apparently next year to 82.5.
That's good.
And what was the other thing? They're predicting by 2025 the escrow payment will be paid off, so the cap can will rise to approximately $90 million. Which, this is another topic that I just want to touch on quick before we move on and wrap this up. It was brought to my attention tonight. No team signed contracts in 2018 or 2019 with the anticipation of COVID. No one thought, oh my gosh, there's going to be a worldwide virus that's going to shut almost everything down. So teams that signed massive contracts for players in 2018, 19, whatever, didn't anticipate the cap being basically stalled for 3 years. The cap was already supposed to be at 90 by next year. Just keep that in mind, because now you're going to see, I think, contracts this year and next year, and this year or this offseason and next offseason, or potentially maybe starting next offseason, reflect that again, where you're seeing contracts now go up to the 6 or 7 rather than the 4 or 5s, because then they'll have more space. Or they'll front or backload their contracts, so then in the other half of the portion of the contract is where the bulk of the money comes when the cap goes up. Anyway, Scott, you want to talk about the Shea Weber trade?
Sure. Shea Weber traded to Vegas. Montreal gets Evgeny Dadonov in return. I think it's a trade that helps both teams. Montreal needs, not necessarily needs, but I guess any team really needs a top six guy or top nine guy who can help them produce offensively. And then Vegas gets the LTIR cap relief from Shea Weber's $8, $9 million contract, whatever he makes, which they obviously need more than I think Montreal needs the guy, because they're struggling to, or are going to struggle with contracts in the either right now or coming years.
Interesting deal. I was surprised that when I saw that. Is there any other rumors that you guys have heard around the NHL? Oh, sorry. So what?
Was Weber supposed to be traded? I thought I heard.
Yeah, he was.
Rumblings months ago that he was supposed to be moved.
Yeah, I heard that it was supposed to be to Arizona, because Arizona was just going to keep his money on the books and not move it to LTIR to meet the cap floor. But Vegas.
But needs it makes more, sense that why Vegas did it though.
Yeah, and Dadonov, like you said, is like he'll probably slot in with the top. Maybe 6 to 9 role, obviously, because they'll probably get Shane Wright. But, actually, speaking about Montreal and Shane Wright, apparently what's the GM's name there? Kent Hughes was asked what they're going to do with their first pick, and he said they're still deciding. And then a story came out that the Yuri, whatever his name is, Slavkovsky.
Or whatever.
Yes.
I think he is.
Yeah, I have him ranked at 2 on my top 100. I think that there's a potential that Montreal takes him. Apparently, they're super impressed with him. His name's Slavkovsky. I'm going to assume his first name is probably Yurji. I don't know. It's like J-U-R-A-J. I don't know how to say his first name. I'm not Slovakian. But yeah, super talented guy. Really rose up the stocks during the Olympics, and if they take him, I think I've said this just a couple of days ago, I think that he'll have a better upside in the NHL than Shane Wright. I could be wrong, but that's what I think. So I hope Montreal does kind of take him, because that would be kind of cool. But in the same sense, Shane Wright versus Austin Matthews for years to come would also be cool.
Who has the second pick?
Anyways, pardon me? Arizona?
Who has the second pick?
No. Yeah, Arizona, I think. New Jersey?
I mean, either way, I think either guy you pick, you're getting a solid player. Montreal picks Slavkovsky, Arizona gets right. If Montreal picks right, Arizona gets Slavkovsky.
I think it's Arizona. Oh, no, it's New Jersey. New Jersey gets two. Yeah, New Jersey gets two. Arizona gets three. Either way, if you get if Shane Wright, Slavkovsky, or Logan Cooley gets picked one, two, or three, because like there's a kind of some talk that Logan Cooley might be getting picked one or could be getting picked one, I think that they're all going to be super talented guys. And then there's Semyon Nemec or Nemec, who's also Slovakian. And there's David Juric, who's Czechia? I don't know. Yeah, so I think the top five is going to be super deep for years to come. So, I mean, but I mean, yeah. Still, it's kind of cool because, like, a lot of people have been saying all year that Shane Wright's not a number one pick. That his potential, his upside, it's kind of like Lafreniere. Like, his upside is probably not going to be as high as what they're saying, because some people are saying, like, Bergeron comparables, and now other people are saying Ryan O'Reilly. Like, a guy that I know, he said that he thinks that it would be Ryan O'Reilly, so shout out to that guy if you ever listen. But, like, I think that's kind of interesting that now, just, what, less than a month before the draft, now they're saying that there could be a chance. Like, that's kind of exciting. But anyways, we'll do a draft special or a draft conversation for the Leafs in the coming weeks. Any other news and notes from around the league that you guys want to touch on?
I just want to touch on the Shea Weber deal just real quick again. In regards to the LTIR itself, because I absolutely hate when teams do that. Like, I know, and people are probably yelling, when they listen to this, they're going to be yelling, like, the Leafs did it too. Yeah, I know, I didn't say they didn't. I just hate when they do. It kind of just defeats the purpose of a salary cap when teams can go and trade for $8, $9 million player or seven, or bring in, or even just use a guy on their team who makes $9 million. And then they put them on the LTIR, and then they just get $9 million more than they actually should have. It annoys me when teams do that.
Yeah, it annoys me too, but you know what else annoys me the most? That in like 2017 or 2016 when they voted on it, you actually told me this, Scott, but when they voted on removing it, the only team that voted to remove it was the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, and now they've used it 2 years in a row.
And they literally put Kucherov on the LTIR for, I don't know, the whole year.
Yeah.
And then he wore a shirt during his post-game Stanley Cup press conference saying, like, $18 million over the cap. Like,
yeah. And I brought this up to you earlier, Spencer. If teams are going to keep doing it, the league should put a rule in that you're only allowed to use so much. Like, set it at, like, $5 million of LTIR relief. Because it's kind of annoying when teams can use 10, 11 million of LTIR relief to bring in other players to help them win a Stanley Cup win. And I just think it kind of defeats the purpose of having a salary cap when teams can go $18 million over the cap. So if you added the rule a rule where you're like, we're going to give you a $5 million relief of LTIR, then it kind of makes it harder for teams to circumvent the cap, because they have to strategize more about when they're going to use it, who they're going to use it for.
And that is why I think, I actually forgot what I was going to say. So, that's embarrassing. Let me think for a second. Yep, not coming to me. Okay, we'll move on. Is everyone done?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything that I've thought of.
Scott?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on that at the last minute, and then, yeah, everything else, I'm good.
Okay, well, we're not done yet, boys. We got the finals predictions that were made last night before the 8 o'clock start of the game. Scott, then Kyle, then me, so I can have time to think about that thought I had.
I have Colorado winning in six over Tampa Bay. I mean, both are good teams, but I think Colorado's better. Maybe not by much, but they are better. So I think Colorado's going to win in six.
I have Tampa Bay in seven. I know last night Colorado obviously came up with game one, but Tampa has lost every game one. I think it was every game one. They've been known to come back so far in this playoffs. So I'm not very concerned. I think they're going to, Avs are going to put up a fight. Both teams are going to actually put up a fight. But I think Tampa is going to come out victorious in game seven.
Tampa sucks. Avs at six.
I still think they're going to win.
I think if Toronto would have beaten Tampa and the refs wouldn't have cheated Toronto, because they did, I think that Toronto would have been facing Colorado right now. However, I'm going to say Avs in six. I said it first, not Scott, because of this reason. Colorado is the fastest opponent Tampa's ever played in the last 3 years of playoffs. And I think that that is going to be an impactful element to the series. And it showed last night, especially in the first period, when the forecheck, because of Colorado's speed, was way too hard and way too fast to match. And Hedman was bobbling up the puck like, I don't even know. He was fumbling the puck like someone fumbles a football. I'm not a big football fan, so let's just move on.
Like Mark Sanchez?
The butt fumble. Exactly. Yeah. I thought of that thought, and here it is.
Huh?
A lot of people have been saying lately that Tampa Bay, if they win this year, which Scott predicted, by the way, because earlier in the podcast he said Tampa's won three in a row, so maybe he's predicting something.
They could win three in a row, is what I said.
Okay, I'm going to retract that. Anyways, so people are saying that it's the most impressive thing in NHL history for a dynasty because they won three Stanley Cups in the salary cap era. And this is what I'm going to say to that. F you guys for thinking that. And here's why. Because of the LTIR. You didn't win the Stanley Cup under the salary cap, but because you, whatever the word, circumvented the salary cap and won $18 million over the cap or $16 million or whatever it was. Same as Vegas. If they would have won this year and they miraculously put Pacioretty and Mark Stone on the LTIR when they needed space for Jack Eichel, like, no, you guys aren't winning in the salary cap. Winning in the salary cap would legitimately be staying within the $81 million that you have to spend and not going over it. I don't think that that is that impressive when you're putting Kucherov on. Like, no one remembers that, it seems. Like, you put Kucherov on the LTIRs, whatever, for, what, 8 months, 6 months? And then brought him back and he was practicing with your team? Like, the thing I think that the NHL needs to incorporate, if they're not going to do some penalized or luxury tax, I think that they need to incorporate an NHL doctor. If the team says, okay, Austin Matthews is injured, he needs to go on the LTIR, he needs to go to an NHL doctor who has no tie to any team, just the NHL, and it needs to be checked or triple checked by 1, 2, 3 doctors to actually verify, because I feel like a lot of the times that they put players on LTIR is absolute BS. And here's the situation that I have for you before I wrap this up. Mike Smith said that he was going to retire, potentially retire, after Edmonton got beat out. Some people said that he was just a hostile dude and he's mad about losing, blah, blah, blah. Sorg comes out the next day that he's apparently really banged up and he played the whole season injured and he's like 40 years old, so... So what is the story now? Well, the story now is that the Edmonton Oilers might keep him around next year and put him on LTIR. Isn't that a little bit suspicious to you guys? The guy says he's going to retire. He's physically too injured to play, but yet he's going to stay around? Come on.
If they publicly announce that they're going to already use LTIR to circumvent the cap, shouldn't they get in trouble for that?
Well, I mean, Edmonton Oilers, I don't think, has come out publicly and said it. But it's been rumored by Elliot Freeman and that he's probably going to be on LTIR next year if he doesn't retire. How the heck does that happen? How does one person come out and say that he's going to retire, and then the next day the team comes out and says that he played injured and blah, 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 and Mike Smith says he's old and he's banged up and he's tired, and then a week later there's a story about how he might stay and come back with the team next year and go on LTIR? That's like, what, $4 million that Edmonton now gets to use?
Yeah, I don't get that.
Well, I mean, realistically, the disadvantage of it is that doesn't count through the summer. Like, that money counts to your salary cap. So Vegas trading and getting Shea Weber, that 8.6 or whatever counts towards until they can put him on LTIR, which I believe is in the first week of the season. So they could actually have a trade lined up that they can't pull off until they get him on LTIR. Same as Edmonton. They might have a player that they want to sign, but they can't put all that money on him because, I mean, it's only like $4 million, $3 million for Edmonton. But point is, like, something smells a little fishy to me. Like, this doesn't seem like actually, legitimately staying within the salary cap to win Stanley Cup. So that's all I'm saying. So I'm not going to be as impressed if Tampa Bay wins three in a row. I mean, it is impressive that they won three in a row because we haven't seen that. I mean, maybe Scott has because he's 90 years old. But other than that,
I actually haven't seen it. The last team to do it was Islanders in the late 70s, early 80s. So I haven't seen it, actually.
I thought you were born in 74.
Not even close.
Anyways, I mean, just think that
it makes sense why teams are doing it because everybody expected the cap to be a lot higher than what it is right now. I just think
I agree.
It kind of defeats the purpose of a salary cap when teams are literally just ignoring it because they have found a way around it.
I just think like don't say that it's going to be the most impressive thing in the last dynasty in the NHL because they've done it in a salary cap world when they really didn't just stay within the salary. Yes, they did it within the salary cap era, but like I understand that's the point because there's a limit of how much you can spend. But is there really? Tampa Bay won what? Anyways, and for those people who are going to listen to this and say these losers, they wouldn't say this with Toronto. Actually, I believe that me and Scott did the year that they had acquired Riley Nash from Columbus, and just to put him on LTIR so they could bring back Zach Hyman. And we're like, what's the point?
I literally said it. I said it in my point on this podcast that I hate when teams do it, including
the Leafs. Yeah, I know, but people are gonna. Yeah, I know, but people are always gonna say, like, if we said this any other time, people would say, "Well, if the Leafs did it, it would be fine." No, that's BS to me.
Yeah, they'll Toronto, say this.
Exactly, and when Toronto acquired Riley Nash from Columbus the year that they got Nick Foligno, just to bring back Zach Hyman, I was like, "This is complete bullshit and a waste of time." A part of my language, sorry. This is a waste of time for Toronto to do it, and then they played him in the series, so whatever.
Here's a fun fact about Toronto. They're the only team in NHL history that has won the Stanley Cup three or more times in a row, more than once.
Go, Leafs, go! Go, Leafs, go! That's what I think. Rising up,
the teams who have, back the teams on who have won three straight Stanley Cups or more are the Islanders in the 70s, 80s, Montreal, when they won five, and then the Leafs have won it twice, or done it twice.
Yeah. And the Leafs have also won it 13 times. So, shut up.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's wrap this sucker up because I'm tired.
You tell him.
You know what, Kyle? Let's sing a little bit. Rising up.
All right. You're good.
Sorry, it's not a deal. Okay.
Oh, F, I forgot the song that I was supposed to sing to you guys by Jesse McCarthy. Damn. I'll get it next week. I'll catch you next time.
McCartney.
Oh, Kyle, you're a big fan?
Yeah. It's Jesse McCartney.
I don't care. Point is, I kicked behind at that American Idol game. I'm just going to get one final thing in here because I didn't mention it earlier today, but I want to try and see if there's any other thank you for the, 12 new subscribers that we got on the podcast. We much appreciate it. Just seeing if there's any other new countries. Did I mention Dominican Republic? Last time?
I think you have. I don't know if it was last time, but I think you mentioned them before.
Well, welcome. Mauritius, welcome. Kyle, last week we got a... Yeah, that's it. That's all the new ones. Last week we got a listener from Kazakhstan, so I'm wondering if it's Nick Andropov's cousin or family. If it is, shout out. Other news is Nick Andropov. Trying... That's true, it could be. I'm trying to see how to go about getting a guest on here. I want to try and get someone like other podcasts, like New York Bangers or same thing happened last week. same thing happened last week. Anyways, they're called the New York Painters. Follow them on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Listen to their podcast, but they have some big guests on, and I want to try and get some guests on starting soon because it will be cool to get some draft updates, and some player perspective from former players that used to play for the Leafs.
First guest, Jamie McLennan.
I'm thinking first guest, maybe I'm going to try and see if we could get, Jamie McLennan would be a good option actually. But I'm thinking I'm going to try and see, because we're a Leafs like centered podcast and Real Kipper and Bourne is, so I want to try and see if we can get Justin Bourne on and how to go about that.
You know who I heard was free? Pierre McGuire.
Oh, yeah, Pierre McGuire, yeah. Breaking news, dude got fired.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all. Buy merch, donate to us.
What about Craig Button?
What about Sam? Sam Cosentinoff or Cosentino. A little story about that guy. I know a guy personally, super great dude. Scott, I talk about him a lot. He's a scout. I talked to Scott about this guy a lot. He took this guy's opinion one time and then went on TV and told that opinion and then never gave this guy credit, never answered his call again, never talked to him. So Sam Cosentino, do better and come on our podcast to apologize. Anyways, donate, because we're going to try and do a jersey giveaway. Buy merch, subscribe, social media, follow us. Thank you. Go Leafs, go. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Go Leafs, go.
Rising up, back on the street.